Hi, everybody. This is Leslie Rohde, and with me is Lynn Terry.
Hi, Leslie. How are you?
I'm doing fabulous this morning. So we're both actually speaking, not together, but at the same conference, at Ed Dale's event later on this week in Melbourne, Australia. And I thought it would be fun to actually just catch up before we actually land in Australia and figure out, hey, what are we actually talking about?
And you know what? I think that's a great idea, actually. So I was super thrilled to hear you were coming to the Coming Home seminar at Dale's event over there in Australia. It's been several months since I've seen you. Actually, it's the last time I saw you was in Atlanta.
That's right.
Probably last fall. Yeah, so I'm really looking forward to this event and interested to hear what you're speaking about there.
Well, you know, it won't be much, I'm sure, but no. Okay.
Maybe a little
okay,
idea.
So here's I'll give you the marketing tease. Okay, so here's the headline: a 21-point system to run a successful online business entirely from free traffic.
Very cool.
Yeah. Well, we'll see. I mean, I'm still working. I've decided to turn over a new leaf and actually do my slides before I get on the airplane. And my plan for that is to show up at the airport really early tomorrow.
There you go. You sound like me. Yeah, so that's pretty good. I kind of joked, you know, about this event that Ed Dale just wants to show us all his iPhone, you know? But there's actually quite a few speakers lined up and some really great content, so I'm getting super psyched about being there. They're going to be, of course, the Flippa guys will be there. You'll be there. Yaro Sterik and, of course, Darren Rouse of ProBlogger and Dan Rain, just a number of really cool folks are going to be at this particular event, so should be pretty good.
You know a lot more about who's there in the agenda than I do. I don't know what your source of information is. I think Ed's been holding out on me.
Oh, yeah, he's good at that, actually.
So do you have, like, actually an agenda? Do you know when we're speaking?
I don't, but I do have I didn't actually know that I was going to be speaking, and I'm not speaking. I'm just on a panel presenting. But it's kind of evolving this week, I think. So I'm really excited about my panel because I'm on Friday, and I found that out quite by accident, so don't feel bad. But I'm going to be on a panel on Friday with Yaro Sterik, Dan Rain, and ProBlogger, and we're going to be discussing Third Tribe and blogging and social media. So it's I'm quite excited about that. And do you know what day that you're speaking or presenting?
I have no idea. And Ed actually pitched it to me as, whenever you'd like to kind of a deal, and I don't know when that is. So
great.
I'll just show up and we'll play it by ear because I think that's how we normally do those sorts of things. But
yeah, normally
now,
that's
the Third Tribe thing. Yeah, I just read your post on that at Click News with a Z, and obviously I don't get out much, so I don't actually know what any of that stuff even means. But
I'll be interested
to hear about it in Australia.
Yeah, I didn't either because I've been traveling so much. Like I went to Vegas for Christmas, and then I was on a cruise, and then I was in Atlanta speaking at a workshop, and I've just been all over the place. So I was actually on a podcast with Ed Dale. We do a podcast every week called InternetMarketingThisWeek.com, and IMTW for short. And it's Michelle McPherson, Paul Colligan, Ed Dale, and I. And they brought it up in the last episode, and it was the first I'd heard of it. So it was pretty funny because, you know, they brought up the controversial side of it, so we had a good laugh about it. But I looked into it yesterday and decided to join up. It's actually $47 a month. And the concept behind it is that there are two basic tribes in the social media space. There are the internet marketers, and then there are the social media evangelists who really don't like the internet marketers cluttering everything up with, you know, ads and marketing and all that kind of stuff. And so the concept of Third Tribe is that there can be a third tribe where both of these groups can collaborate and share resources and discuss the topics and the evolving industry. And I signed up, logged in, and there are a lot of familiar faces in there. It's really sweet the way it's set up. There's a lot of high-quality content. So definitely checking it out. It's pretty cool so far.
I will absolutely do that. Well, that's awesome. So you're doing a weekly podcast of that group. That's interesting.
Yeah, it's pretty fun. They're big tech geeks, of course, and I'm an internet marketer, of course, as is Michelle McPherson. So the big joke is always on Michelle and I about how technically challenged or whatever we are. And but it's a fun podcast. There's a lot of back and forth. We discuss what's going on in the industry. We discuss what's coming out as far as gadgets and devices to make our work easier and things like that. So it's always a fun podcast.
Interesting. Well, one of the I recently, David Jenyons interviewed me. He's a follows Ed, and we'll be at the conference. He was excited that you were coming as well.
I did an interview with him last week.
Oh, did you? Oh, wow, excellent. Yeah. But he does a lot of those, and he's a great interviewer, isn't he?
He is, absolutely.
Yeah, but he asked, he may actually have asked you the same questions. We should compare notes. He may actually have like a standard agenda.
Yeah.
How he does these interviews. So like one of the questions was the biggest mistake you see people making in internet marketing. Did he ask you that one?
You know, I think that he did actually, and my response was probably, I can't remember off the top of my head, but one of the biggest mistakes that I see people making in internet marketing is number one, did they get hung up on the numbers or the models or the methods instead of actually, you know, trying to start and create a business that serves the market. We get hung up on, okay, I'm supposed to create a mini site that's 10 pages with a keyword that has a search volume of 362 or more per day, and you know, and they get hung up on all of the details or the semantics of the process. And when really being an entrepreneur is about, you know, having the intuitive or creative mind to create a product or a service or a position where you're serving a market.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I get that a lot as well. I mean, people are so infatuated with the skills, and
right,
that's one of the reasons that people are drawn to SEO. And one of my catchphrases is that optimization will reduce the amount of work you have to do, but will not reduce it to zero. Because everybody wants the magic bullet,
right?
That will actually make it all work with no effort. They want to be able to push the button and money comes out. And so they think that by studying it in greater and greater depth and understanding all the minutiae and all the detail, that somehow they'll make a business. And in fact, it's the opposite end of the spectrum is where they ought to be focused, right?
It really is, you know, and you could get so bogged down in that. But then if I did that, if I was tracking every single Google update and following every single forum thread on, you know, webmasterworld.com about it, or if I was trying to stay on top of all that, I would never have the time to create the pages, find the keywords, get the backlinks, and make the money.
Exactly right. In fact, that let's see, which of my mindset minders is that? Let me see. I have to spin through my presentation. You cannot measure your way to wealth.
There you go.
It's like Google Analytics is this lovely thing, and it's probably the best thing to ever happen to search since Google. But wow, it's so easy to get lost. That's like the ultimate labyrinth.
And you know, I have a confession to make, and this is probably going to like shock you, so I hope you're sitting down.
I
don't use Google Analytics.
Oh, my God, it is shocking.
I know.
Let that out.
I know. I read Jerry West's guide. You know, he has a great SEO guide, and I was reading his guide, and it really inspired me to start using it. But one of my issues is that I'm very one-track-minded and super focused. So I run absolutely no toolbars on my browsers. I don't run any add-ons. I don't run any software hardly on my computer. It runs like a dream, usually. And so I keep it really super simple, and I stay really super focused, and Google Analytics is one of those things that would just suck me in. But that said, when we're out in Melbourne next week, I would love to have an opportunity to sit down with you and let you just kind of give me the quick tour of what I should look at and what I can ignore, or what are the key points of Google Analytics. That'd be great.
Yeah, in fact, I mean, it is a central part of what I teach people to do now is actually kind of a closed-loop system. Dan and I have Dan Thieve and I have a very different approach that are complementary in that regard in terms of like doing keyword research up front before you launch a website, which is Dan's forte, and he's incredibly well known and very skilled in that in the industry. What I do is I show people how to actually let Google Analytics guide your site for you. You have to be careful with that though, because if you let Google Analytics completely control what you go after, then you may actually find yourself over a period of 9 months becoming a porn site. And so,
right.
and there's some sites are closer to that than others, but if you actually do have to have this overarching theme, which is what we just talked about, about actually that intuitive aspect about what is my business really about, and let that be the overall guide. But within that, Google Analytics will actually tell you where your best opportunities are for short-term gains.
Interesting.
That's part of the 21-point system.
You know, we have to give Dan a plug here because love Dan Thies, and he has his free guide at www.seofaststart.com. I recommend that to everyone I meet before I even get started, you know, as far as answering questions, because it's such a thorough guide. So that's seofaststart.com. But, you know, you can get so pulled into all of this stuff, and a lot of people are hung up on those numbers. And I'll tell you, one of the types of things that I like to do is I go for that low-hanging fruit that you SEO guys like to call it. And so as an example, and I share this in the workshops that I do, as an example, I have a page that I created. It's not a blog. It's just a web page. And I created it over 4 years ago. And promotes a ClickBank product. But it's not my norm. I'm not really a big ClickBank fan. But this particular product is not in the internet marketing niche, and it's one of my favorite, personally one of my favorite products. It's an audio download. So anyway, I created this page like over 4 years ago. I optimized it for several keyword phrases. So it currently ranks in the top three or four for three different keyword phrases. All three of them are very specific long tail keyword phrases that get very low search volume. So most people would look at those in their keyword research and say, oh, 8 searches a day, I'm not going for that. But since it ranks number one for two of them and number three for the third one, keyword phrase, it gets quite a bit of traffic and it's highly targeted. So it took me, 20-30 minutes to create the page. I did it 4 years ago. I've never touched it since. And I get sales every week.
Yep.
Every single week. I mean, it's just that simple. You know,
it absolutely can be, particularly after, you know, something that's long tail. Absolutely, totally is.
Right. And I know that SEO gets a lot more complex, and I appreciate, you know, your position in the market because it is huge and it is very complex. But I do think that's one of the biggest mistakes that people make is getting so caught up in all those details that they're not actually creating the pages, getting the links, and making the sales.
Yeah, and in fact, if I was to say, and I don't know, I can't remember how I answered David's question, but in terms of the biggest mistake people make, I think is making it overcomplicated.
Yeah.
And the thing about it is, I mean, SEO is in this peculiar place. I just attended the local SEMPO meeting here in Atlanta about a week ago, and somebody coined that SEO now stands for something everyone offers. Which is even better than my joke, that SEO is so simple to spell that everyone does it. And the challenge there, in order to make that work as a business, right, how do you actually build a consultancy like Bruce Clay, you know, just to pick on him because he's like one of the biggest ones and best known? Well, you have to make it a little bit complicated. You can't tell people what I tell them, which is, well, basically it hasn't changed in 7 years, so just read my old books, you know. That just doesn't really build much of a client base, if you follow me.
Uh-huh.
And so there you have to resort to using the fear, uncertainty, and doubt in the SEO space. You have to play along with that to some extent in order to actually build a consultancy. So FUD sells SEO. But the reality is it's not that complicated, as you just pointed out. Now, I mean, given what you just told me, I could actually tune that and show you why, you know, 3 to 4, actually there's a huge opportunity there that you're missing out, and you could probably triple your sales. But in order to tell you that, it will take 10 minutes, and it will be a life lesson. And so that's the challenge. A lot of people get so hung up on the, quote, complexity of SEO, they never actually get anything done.
Right. Mm-hmm. That's a huge problem in the industry because, you know, it brings up the question of, you know, is this a hobby for you? You know, as far as just knowing everything you can about internet marketing, or are you serious about creating an online business or creating a passive income? And for me, like, I get what you're saying, and I know that I could do a lot with that one page because it's doing so well already, and I could get in and tweak it. But the fact is, I haven't touched it in 4 years, and I'm still getting sales every week. So I'm getting, you know, checks twice a month for that page I created 4 years ago. My big goal, and everyone's is different, but mine is passive income.
Yep.
And so, yeah, if I wanted to sit at my computer all day and tweak to my heart's content, which I used to do, and I used to really love it, I was a real geek like that, I could. But, you know, I've got so many of those. If you consider that I just started my 14th year in business, and that's one web page. So if you consider how many pages across how many domains across how how many niches I possibly have in this amount of time. It's just kind of like, that's cool. I'll fly to Australia and the checks can just come in.
Exactly, right. Yeah, and that's the thing is that people miss, big companies in particular, don't know how to price SEO because it's a real different proposition to, you know, something like pay-per-click, for example, or even email marketing to a lesser degree. And that is that you're actually, you should, if we were accounting for it correctly, according to generally accepted accounting practices, GAAP, then anything we did that related to SEO or even, frankly, probably even building a website that could ever get free traffic, so maybe even prior to actually doing quote optimization, right, we should actually be amortizing that expense rather than expensing it into current account.
Interesting. Yeah.
Because it's we're not actually doing advertising. We're building a new restaurant, right?
Right.
You know, when you build a new location, you're required by GAAP to amortize, not expense.
Mm-hmm.
And then that's because the SEO is a passive. It is a residual. And so the expense associated with that should actually be spread out in future years. We just don't happen to know how long it'll last and you know,
There are so many questions in that department. You know, one of the things that comes to my mind with all of this coming out about the Amazon tax and the iTunes tax and yada, 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 I'm thinking, what's next? You know, virtual property tax? I mean, as you think about, you know, all these different services that will, you know, give you the value or the estimation, you know, estimated value of your blog or your domain or all your various virtual properties and assets online. And I think I have a blog that 3 years ago was estimated at $1.8 million, something like that, in value. Yeah.
Nice.
But, property tax could be insane.
Yeah, and I guess that's at least like the right kind of tax. But yeah, it's let's hope that they can't figure out how to wage that tax war. But
let's hope, yeah.
Yeah. Well, this was the other side of the what's the biggest mistake? What's the greatest opportunity in online business today? Other than getting free traffic and sitting on the checks. But anyway.
Well, that is a great opportunity. I'll tell you what, going into 2010, I saw two things that were just going to be huge this year. And one is that we have a lot of people who are educated in online marketing because they've been studying all the details and all the little elements of internet marketing. Some of them for years, some of them, you know, just for a year or what have you. So there are a lot of people who are really educated, more educated so than offline people. And one of the big opportunities this year is for those folks who have not yet monetized it or chosen a niche or a figured out model or figured out what to do with all that information or all that skill. And it is to go offline and offer that as a service. Because back in the 90s, and that's when I started, I had a web dev company back in the 90s, and I was putting companies online. And there was this big, you know, boom with that. And then all of a sudden, it just kind of tailored off. And so now, 10 years later, they all want to get back online again. It's more important than ever, you know. And so they need help. I mean, the very few people that are out there offline helping these folks are really clueless compared to, you know, half the people who comment on my blog. No more than the companies that are out there trying to assist these businesses to get online. So the local businesses and companies need consultants. We need offline internet marketing consultants. And there's practically no way to flood that market. I mean, every local area needs a few. So anyway, I think that's a huge opportunity this year, especially for people who, you know, have taken a million courses and read 1,000 e-books, and they have all this knowledge, but they just haven't quite, you know, put together a niche affiliate site or, you know, a blog or a project yet. So that's a huge opportunity right now. On the flip side of that, there are people who are like introverts, like myself, that don't necessarily want to go out and work with clients. And on the flip side of that is to offer services, virtual services. So if you can be the person who optimizes pages or gets backlinks or creates Squidoo lenses or does video marketing, you know, and if you can specialize in something like that, all of the people who are taking advantage of this offline consulting opportunity need people to outsource all the actual tasks to. So those are two really great money-making opportunities with the Internet this year.
I see that as well. You know, I think it's because we've kind of hit the knee in the curve in terms of mind share. Now,
yes.
Now it's like more and more companies finally get that, oh, my God, I've got to be online. And so that's creating the demand that you just described.
Yeah, I mean, it's huge. And, I mean, it does help that we have a president in office who basically used social media to get there.
Yeah,
and I think that made a huge difference, you know, as far as how people felt about the Internet, about needing to be on the Internet and the power of online space and social media. So the third thing I think that's huge, and I would really love to get your take on this as an SEO, but to me, is social media reputation. I mean, for a long time we've had link reputation and how important that is to our overall SEO strategy. And now I'm seeing that social media reputation is incredibly important, especially with Google and Bing and other places licensing the feeds from sites like Twitter and Facebook. So they're pulling this data in, this content, into their search results, and there is an algorithm to that. It's not random. I mean, there is an algorithm to that as far as what shows up for what search terms over, you know, something else. And so I think things like how many inbound links you have to your social media profile, let's say your Twitter profile or your Facebook page, how many friends you have or how many you follow versus how many follow you, whether or not you're using automated software systems to inflate your numbers or whether you have a legitimate, you know, following in the space, things like that, I think that the social media reputation is going to rank up there in the algorithms like link reputation. Any thoughts on that?
Yeah, we have to go all the way back to first principles here and follow the money. And that follow the money at Google is the deal. Google has a couple of things that they're extraordinarily good at. They're so good at that they don't actually care to be getting better. And that would be what we would call classic search results.
Mm-hmm.
And they have anywhere between a, you know, 2 to 4 times lead over the nearest competition. And that's growing because of the instabilities in their competition. So, they don't actually need to do much different in classic search results. And the things that we've seen with like real-time Twitter feeds showing up in search results and stuff like that, that appeared to be an experiment. I haven't actually seen it in like a number of weeks. And they got so hammered publicly about the problems that would generate. And they recognize that they can't actually manage search quality when the search terms are, in fact, in real time and disappear before they can be reviewed. So they have a whole bunch of issues about kind of merging the social concept into classic, you know, classic search results. Sounding something as classic as less than 10 years old is great. But so the other aspect, though, the thing that Google is not good at yet, that they want to be good at, is to own news. And so they want you not to go to CNN to find out the recent headlines. They don't want you to go to weather.com to find out the weather. They want you to just go to Google. And we've all made this mistake. We hear about some disaster, you know, earthquake in Haiti, and we go to Google. It only happened 27 minutes ago, and so, yeah, sure enough, even Google hasn't actually got the story yet. And you'd have to wait for them to spider the CNN web page, you know, the home page, which is the reason they spider that. You know, pretty much every 30 to 60 minutes if you go look at cache dates. So that's great, but they'd actually like take out that middleman. Because why? Because they sell ads on those pages. And so they recognize that there's a huge volume of traffic that currently is landing on search pages. And by the way, one of the presenters at the Simple meeting here in Atlanta was, in fact, the guy in charge of the search at CNN, and he recognizes that Google wants his job.
Right.
He wants his traffic. And then they had recognized that, and the thing about it is Google is going to get it someday. They're going to be the news site.
Mm-hmm.
And then that changes what the news sites do. Now suddenly they have to actually do deeper research instead of just looking at Google and then rewriting it, which is a lot of news organizations do.
Mm-hmm.
So now how does social media and all those other things kind of play into it? And that's where I think the real connection is. I don't think it's going to be in classical search results. I think it's in breaking news or in things which are truly contemporaneous. You have to know about them now, right now, and it's ephemeral. It doesn't last. And so then the question is, what is the reputation management is typically around, company and personal brand, right? Mm-hmm. Those are the kind of things that most people are concerned about. And really, really good reason to be concerned about those things in both current classic results and in social media results. Absolutely. In fact, last year, four different times I did work for people to repair reputation, and I'm currently doing one right now for one of the largest insurance companies in the world, where they have, you know, my company name sucks.com is at position five.
Right.
And that is, I mean, you've got the Ripoff Report and Wolfram and I forget the scam.org. Those guys, and partially it's about the economic climate too, of course, and more people out of work have more time to complain, I think. But in any event, it's a very, very damaging brand of company. It's even worse on the social side because it's even less regulated. I think that's a growing concern. I think that that's going to become huge. The connection of the bridge between the social and the classic result, I'm not sure. There's a model there, and it doesn't support the way the money flows at Google, so I don't really see that there will be a big change there, but there will absolutely be a big change around kind of, quote, real-time results at Google, however that ends up working.
Right. Very interesting. I think the Google has just come out with this Google Buzz, which you know, some people have said they're kind of trying to break into the social media space or, you know, get people to use that over other options. But there was an article in the paper that I missed, but a friend told me about that was that some people were complaining about the information that Google Buzz shared. So I haven't actually accessed it through any of my Gmail accounts, but what are your thoughts on Google Buzz?
You know, I don't know. I haven't actually looked at it. There are so many things going on. And so I don't have an opinion yet except to just look at what's happened in the past around these kinds of things at Google. And indeed, a lot of these things are not obvious when they start, and they do make mistakes. And so it could very well be that they're sharing too much. The challenge there is that people will miss the fact that things are open, and they just there's not a spider that's actually aggregating the data. And so they find out after the fact, oh, my God, I had no idea that you could pull that off of the profile automatically. I thought you had to be logged in, right? Those kinds of problems.
Yeah, well, I'm a little bit Google-phobic, which is no big secret. People know this about me. But from what I understand about Google Buzz, and like I said, I haven't touched it myself, but from what I understand is that it will, you know, rank your friends or it will share a list of your friends and things. So basically, if you and I are Gmailing back and forth, I'll be able to tell through our Buzz accounts who you talk to the most via email, which may or may not be confidential.
But it's a problem. I mean, that's huge. In fact, this is one. I mean, this was a long time after I left college, but a friend of our family pointed out that actually law enforcement organizations had used email traffic between college students to show who was it that bought the beer for a party where underage students were attending.
Wow.
And so, it's those kind of, and in fact, there's been some really good articles in Communications of the ACM concerning mapping terrorist networks using email traffic and just phone calls without actually knowing the content of anything, just that the fact that the connections occurred. Imagine what happens if you, if you are, say, a famous golfer, you know, and your Facebook profile has a bunch of friends or friend requests, even not even people who have been confirmed as friends, from a bunch of women, and your wife happens to notice, right? There are things like that that are just network analysis that can lead to real problems for people.
Right.
The one that just recently? A personalized search. I'm sorry, that's another one. You know, if you sit down at my computer and you do a search, and it's biased in a particular way, and the argument will be, well, you shouldn't let somebody else do searches on your computer, that doesn't really hold a lot of water because people aren't going to get that. They don't understand the technology well enough. And so if my search results are highly specialized in one particular direction or another, could that not actually become sort of embarrassing?
Well, not only that,
what about a shared computer within a family environment? Oh, no. You see, this does not. Highly personalized search has some interesting issues as well.
In addition to that, I think it's very limiting.
Yes, it is.
Yeah, it's very limiting. I think I've been Google phobic for a long time now. It was years ago when they published the residential listings out of the phone book, and then all of a sudden you could type in Lynn Terry, Tennessee, and it would Google map me.
Yep.
Right, and that's just because I happen to have a landline in the town I live in. Right.
Yep.
So, I actually disconnected my landline and moved.
Oh, nice.
Well,
okay.
I mean,
maybe phobia is the right, yeah. Maybe even
had someone show up at my Yeah, I had someone show up at my back door at night from the internet. And so I think it's one thing for Google to take the yellow pages, you know, the commercial listings that are paying to advertise, and pull those in so that you can find, you know, basically anything you need. But to, you know, to basically Google map somebody just if you know their name and their state.
Well, the thing is, and this is the bizarre thing about search, is that all of that information was publicly available, just much harder to find. And the challenge with any piece of technology is, if it's easier to do, more people will do it.
Well, it's about that old saying about, you know, keeping an honest man honest.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if someone wants to break into my house, you know, all the locked doors and security systems and things like that are not going to keep them from doing it. But, you know, if you know, an honest man comes by and the door's locked, he's not going to just walk right in.
Yeah.
You know, it goes back to that saying, yeah.
Yeah, and the thing is, because, you know, the web redefines huge, of course, which is good for us, but at the same time, there is that issue that because, I mean, it's not just your opportunity for profile increases, but your threat profile does as well.
Mm-hmm.
So now something, you know, where somebody just sees your picture online, that increases your threat profile beyond just your, you know, the public environment you have to be physically located in. And that's a challenge. That there's fundamentally no real simple way around it. And it's getting, you know, it's getting more like that rather than less like that. I mean, I had a blog post a while back where I said, is the world getting larger or is the world getting smaller? You know, people talk about how communications and travel make the world smaller. I said, well, no, actually the opposite's what's going on, because that means more of the world is within your span of attention and control. So if more of the world is going inside your head on a yearly basis, the world's getting larger. Your world is getting larger.
Exactly.
You know?
I know mine certainly has.
Yeah. I mean, it's like, I mean, even 50 years ago, we'd be flying to Australia to give a presentation? Seriously? Really?
No. And so now, instead of, you know, talking to my neighbors on my street and my closest, you know, friends and family, I'm talking to my friends in Australia or in London or what have you. And so, yeah, you're right. It really has made my world a lot bigger. You're right.
And how many people do you have ongoing relationships with that you've never actually met?
A lot.
Probably a large number. Yeah, it's a large number, right?
Yeah. Given what I do, especially, yeah, there are quite a few. Luckily, I travel enough, you know, to different types of events. I'm not one of these people that just goes to SEO events or just goes to blogging events. So I get around quite a bit, anything between PubCon to Social Fresh, you know, to Affiliate Summit or whatever. And it's interesting that there are different groups that actually attend these types of events. Have you ever noticed that?
Oh, yeah. It's very interesting. Yeah.
Very much like the cliques in high school that we had, you know. And so you don't see much crossover, but I'm one of these people that likes to go to a lot of different, you know, events and variety of things, and so kind of keep ahead on things in the industry. And I always find that interesting that there's very little crossover at these types of events. That's kind of one of the concepts behind Third Tribe, of course, and the panel that I'm going to be speaking on in Melbourne next week.
Yeah. I mean, that is getting, and that's the hopefully getting Reese's Peanut Butter Cup out of what currently is not necessarily a real union, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think it's great because, like, there hasn't been, and I've noticed this for years because I've attended, like I said, such a variety of events, but there hasn't been much of a crossover. And some of the groups tend to really look down on the others. You know, like, you know, the internet marketers are like, you blog and you don't make money? I mean, What's that about? You know, and then, you know, then you have the bloggers who are, you know, you don't just have bloggers. You have the mommy bloggers. You have the social media evangelists. You know, you have the, it's escaped my mind now, but the journalist. What do you call them?
Oh, yes, right. I don't know.
They're not freelance journalists. They're self something. There's a word for it. But anyway, you have these different groups within the groups as well. And so it becomes very interesting how each of the different groups feel about what they do, and they feel very adamant about it. You know, I actually spoke about a year and a half ago at an event here local to me in Tennessee. It was in Nashville, and it was a group of mommy bloggers. And I actually had a presentation which was, you know, how to get your blog earning, you know, $5,000 a month consistently within the next 90 days. And fortunately, as the keynote speaker, I didn't speak at the beginning of the day. They put me at the end of the day to close out. And that was fortunate because throughout the day, as I listened to the presentations and the Q&A and the feedback, the biggest thing that I heard is, I blog because I love it, and I don't want to pimp my kids. You know, it was kind of the general theme. And I thought, whoa, I rewrote my whole presentation right then and there that day on the spot. So you know how that is, writing them on the fly. And because I didn't know that, you know, but each group has their, you know, their concerns and what they feel is important or what have you. And so it's, I think the third tribe concept is going to be super interesting. And I know where Darren stands on it, and I'm real interested to hear. I'm also on the panel with Yaros Derek and Dan Rain. And Ed Dale, of course, will be emceeing the whole thing. So it should be a really fabulous talk.
Oh, yeah, no, that should be awesome. Yeah, I'm really interested in checking that out. So, and that kind of leads into, I have a question. I follow your stuff on and off, but the challenges are so much to follow. So, and I just saw something on Twitter. What's your latest projects? I know you just kind of went live with something and with Paul. And what's your latest projects? And what are your future projects too? That are the ones already out there.
Great. Yeah, just last month, a few weeks ago, we launched 5000backlinks.com, and it's basically a link up product, and it was originally something that Paul Short and I created for ourselves. Obviously, we both own a lot of domains and work in a lot of niches, and so we need a variety of backlinks. And as you know, variety is obviously the key ingredient to backlinking. So when I'm getting backlinks, I want follow and no follow. I want everything from, you know, guest blog posts to blog comments to forum, you know, reach to just everything across the board from social media to traditional static pages. And I want a good variety. So Paul and I created this product. You know, we were using it ourselves. And there are over 5,000, you know, linking opportunities in the product. And I told him, you know, we were brainstorming one day, and I said, we need to wrap this up and put it out there. And so we created basically a quick indexing guide. We created a daily action guide and, you know, everything, you know, to go around it so that other people could use it. But we created it to be outsource friendly because I outsource and Paul doesn't. So we have it all in PDF files, but then we also have it separated out into mini text files so that I can, you know, pass it on to people who are doing it for me. So it's basically a link op product. That you can do yourself, but it's also set up and ready to outsource as well. So we went live with that last month. It had a really great feedback. Everybody was really happy with it. And, of course, we're continuing to give them new link ops every month for 12 months. So it's a fun project, really fun project. And I'm really not a product developer. I'm an affiliate marketer, and that's how most people know me, as a blogger or an affiliate marketer. And so this is actually my very first product on ClickBank.
Interesting.
After all these years.
you're playing the other side for a change.
Yeah, which is interesting. And I actually have an affiliate program I have a private brainstorming group, which is not very public, but I have an affiliate program. And the big joke is I'm a much better affiliate marketer than I am an affiliate manager. And I joke with my group all the time about this because I think it was several months ago, I double paid everybody. I was like, oh well, Merry Christmas. At least I didn't screw up the opposite way and not pay everybody.
So. Yeah, I've heard that's a bad idea. I don't know. I don't have any direct experience with that, but that's what I've heard.
It's a bad idea. I double paid everybody one month, and it was just funny. And I always make the joke, I'm a much better affiliate marketer than affiliate manager. But it is new territory for me, and I have a lot to share. And I've been blogging my heart out for over 5 years now, 5.5 years I've been blogging full time. And it's surprising I keep coming up with things to say and teach, but I love to put it out there. But I think it's time for me to wrap it up into product style versus blog style. I have a great following on my blog. Everyone loves the content, but I think it's time for me to wrap some of that up more into training or, specific downloadable elements that people can use and implement right away. So I've been kind of testing the waters with that this last year, and I've been taking some of my better tutorials and turning them into PDF files. and that's been very well received. So once I get the backlink project finished, we're just now, you know, really getting it all rolling in passive, which is very important to me because I like the passive income thing. But once that's done, I'm thinking of doing some online affiliate workshops, similar to what I teach in Atlanta at the NAMS event twice a year.
Ah, okay. Interesting. Yeah, that would be good. That would be good to do, absolutely.
Yeah, it's. I have a very simple model, which is affiliate marketing with SEO. And so I don't do pay-per-click. It's, you know, it's basically something anyone can do in any niche. I work across a variety of niches. I always say I sell everything online, from baby bedding to Elvis bobbleheads, you know, and everything in between. And so people are always super curious about all the details. You know, when do you use a pin name? Why do you use a pin name? How do you optimize the page? How do you pick up, you know, a merchant to work with, blah, blah, blah. So I thought to kind of, even though I've touched on all of that over the last 5 years, one thing at a time, I think that a hands-on, step-by-step workshop will probably be the next thing that I put out this year.
Yeah, and that's one of the standard approaches folks teach to building a product, right? Is to write about it in blog format or something like that, or give workshops that are recorded, and then pretty soon you actually have enough to put together a product. You've got to have enough to put together at least three. So, yeah, I think that's like a huge opportunity.
Yeah, I'll tell you, there are two people I really look up to when it comes to quality products in our industry. Obviously, Jimmy D. Brown. I mean, he just puts out some incredible stuff. So I actually purchased his model for doing online workshops so that I could analyze not only, you know, the actual content where he teaches it, but how he did it was using that model himself. So he's one I really look up to as far as putting content out there in the right format to the right market in the right way. And another is Kevin Riley. And,
I haven't actually thought of Kevin's stuff yet.
Yeah, I've bought a couple of his products, like, you know, how to use Animoto to create, you know, product videos, like with cover graphics and screenshots and stuff like that. It was a really good guide, so I started following him a little more closely. He's really great at product creation, and I actually had the opportunity to present with him at a workshop in Atlanta a couple of weeks ago, him and Sid Hale of Rapid Action Profit System.
Mm-hmm.
That was phenomenal. That was a lot
now,
of fun.
What event was that at
That was in Atlanta. It's called NAMS, which is Niche Affiliate Marketing Systems.com. And it's a long domain name, but it's basically a very limited workshop. There's just a couple of hundred people, some awesome presenters, and it's a very hands-on workshop about affiliate marketing and getting traffic and choosing, you know, keywords and niches and things like that. I present at it twice a year. I actually rarely speak anywhere. I turn it down all the time. Ed Dale, of course, you know, that's hard to pass up. He's a good friend. So, but the NAMS thing I do consistently, and it's
Why do you pass up? I mean, is it just that you have clinical stage fright, or why are you passing up speaking?
Well, there's a couple of reasons. I am an introvert. That's, I mean, you know, so I'm not one of those people that wants to be a speaker. And I have a kind of an integrity issue that I refuse to be paid to speak.
Ooh.
Because if I do choose to speak, my group knows that I'm there, and whatever I have to say, I'm behind 100%. I'm not just there to just talk. And I'm real choosy about it. Number one, because I'd rather be home, or I'd rather be off taking the kids to Vegas, you know, or something like that. And so it's not my business model. I love to blog.
Yeah.
That's it. You know, I actually, years ago, you do remember eBay Radio?
No, I don't.
Well, it launched, it's probably close to 10 years ago. Anyway, I was asked to host it, and this was before it ever launched, and I was doing a lot of work with Entrepreneur Magazine's radio station and WS Radio and things like that, and I turned it down. And one of the reasons is because I have a filter, and I say, does this take me closer to my goals, or does this distract me from it? And I have, you know, very clear objectives about what I want to do with my business and how I want to spend my time. And flying all over the place to speak every 2 or 3 weeks is just not in my objective.
Yeah, you probably can find something in between those two extremes. But yeah, I get what you're saying. Twice a year is probably a good number anyway.
Yeah. So I do a lot of webinars and podcasts and you know, things like that going on all the time, which is really what I prefer. But the NAMS workshop, the reason that I do that one is because I get to work hands-on with people right there on the spot. So after I give a presentation and I teach something, then we'll have a live workshop and they actually do it on the spot. So if we're teaching article marketing, then there's a 90-minute, you know, workshop afterwards where they actually kick out articles, get them done.
Right.
So I'm walking around the room along with Jeff Herring and whoever else is in the room and basically helping people with any stumbling block they have. And that's what people really need, and that's where my passion lies, you know, is in the people that are really ready to go that next step.
Yeah, and it's the right format to pattern the right behavior. The challenge we get a lot is people go to conferences as an opportunity to be, quote, working on their business, unquote, without actually doing anything.
Right.
And so by forcing people to actually bring their site with them and do the homework on the spot, that's a real change.
That's a lot different than just giving a presentation for 30 minutes to an hour.
Exactly right.
You know, yeah. As far as how I want to be spending my time and the type of people I want to reach, because there's just so much more to it for me. I've been in it since the beginning. I've been in it since the 90s. I got real passionate about, you know, helping other people. And for me personally, as a woman and now as a single mother for the last 10 years, to be able to stay home full time and be a full time mom and also have, you know, a kick butt career, I mean, it's like the best of both worlds.
Yeah, I mean, I have that experience as well. I mean, as a technologist from way back, I mean, I could be working in CubeLand and living the office space dream, or, oh, wow, hey, here's an alternative, and it's all brought to you by the web.
Exactly.
It creates a set of options and opportunities that just are not possible any other way. So,
yeah, I've seen it.
Thank God for the Internet.
I've seen it completely change people's lives, whether they were parents, moms, dads, had no children, you know, went from, you know, one extreme to the other. I have a fabulous rags-to-riches story myself. And so, you know, I people ask me all the time, because I do this so heavily in this space as far as, you know, the social media and the blogging and the forum and the group and things that I do, and they're like, do you not get exhausted with it because they're, you know, you must be talking to 10,000 people a day collectively, and yet only a few of them are actually action takers. And I've actually put a lot of thought into that as I've been kind of tweaking my business model and things over the years. And, you know, my take on that is I'm just putting it out there once, and it's reaching all of these people. And if there's one person out there that gets it, it hits them at the right time, at the right place, and it changes their life, it is so worth it. Because that happened to me. You know, I mean, there were two or three people, you know, I can look back on my past and say that they said something or did something or opened an opportunity for me that completely influenced, you know, my thinking and my decision making and things like that, and brought me where I am today, you know?
Yep, that's right. No, we all have that. I mean, and that was, in fact, oh, gosh, maybe I shouldn't record this, but I'll never get around to it, so I might as well just let this one go. A book title that would absolutely sell, The Myth of the Self-Made Man.
Hmm.
And it's because none of us are actually self-made.
Right.
The fact is, we did the work, but we got inspired by somebody. There was some series of events that resulted in where we are. And
exactly.
And you could remove any one of them, and who knows what path you'd have taken instead.
Right. And, you know, the interesting thing is you can hear something today, but it may not resonate with you until 2 years from now.
Exactly.
You know, so I think I love the web for the fact that if I go and speak somewhere, I can speak to, you know, anywhere from 50 to 500 people. But if I put it out on the web, it can reach millions over time. And it takes me a lot less time. I don't even have to get out of my PJs. You sit here with a cup of coffee and speak to the world and hopefully make a difference somewhere, sometime. And that's of course, you know, what my objective is. So that's actually my labor of love, because it's not where I earn the majority of my online income. I earn the majority of my online income through the SEO and niche affiliate marketing on the long tail.
Yeah,
so you have to ask yourself, you know, when you get to the point where you've reached your financial goals, what do you want to do with your time?
Well, join SCORE is one thing, by the way, but that's another story. That's a little further out. But yeah, it's like, and the thing is, you're pointing out there about this is the unknown germination time. It's the thing that happens where you'll say something, it'll live out there in the wild, because there's almost, for any of us that actually have a significant presence on the Internet, there is a living history of us at Google.
Yes.
And so you can find stuff, you know, that you did, you know, 5, 6, 10 years ago, same thing with me. And some of that stuff, because it, you know, maybe we're not even saying that stuff anymore, but it may be the message is still relevant or whatever. But whether it's on the web or whether it's in somebody's notebook from a seminar we did or whatever, at some point it might actually find fertile soil. It's a seed. It's just stuck out there. And the thing about it, the difference in the analogy is that the germination time is highly variable and unknown.
Exactly.
You don't know when the... Go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, you know, what the cool thing is about that, Leslie, is I'm still, you know, I'm still impressionable. I'm still being influenced. And even before, you know, Ed mentioned to me that I would be on this panel with Yarrow and Darren and Dan Rain, I was actually coming to the event just as a guest, just to attend the event, because I'm still looking for those bits of inspiration or those, you know, ideas. Not that someone may actually give you the idea as is, per se, but that it would spark an idea in your mind. So that's one of the reasons that I travel as much as I do and hit the events and listen in and stuff like that, because I'm still, you know, still picking up all those things and changing and evolving and growing in my life and business as well. So it's a never-ending cycle. But and the cool thing about the web is the reach that it has at any given time. You know, I can pick up a classic like Think and Grow Rich. You know, which was which has been out forever. So I can pick that up and become inspired, or you know, change my mindset or anything like that. And I think there's a lot of that going both ways for most of us.
Oh yeah, totally. Yeah, I always get something. And most seminars I go to, frankly, I get more from, or as much at least, depending upon the presentation schedule. But I get as much from just talking to people after the event. So they talk about the meeting after the meeting, right?
Exactly.
It's just sharing stuff one-on-one. It absolutely sparks ideas. And almost all of the active partnerships I have today were built that way. From, in fact, it was one of the people who actually is an outsourcer we use. I told her that she needed to go register this domain. I don't know if she actually did or not, but Inked Over Drinks was the idea I had for a domain name about how to do networking at the bar. But
exactly.
I mean, that's where so many deals are actually done. I mean, it's like with that at least as the excuse that I'll pitch the IRS. That's the reason I attended the Fifth Thing event that was, I know, a couple weeks back. Because where else can you actually, those kinds of events where you have this confluence of marketing folks and potential joint venture partners and those kind of things, those occur at these live events. So the thing like Ed Dale is bringing together, where there's this long, long list of folks that are traveling distance, they're all going to be there in one spot at the same time, and you'd have to like live the life of a travel life, at least of a rock star, to actually go see them individually.
Exactly. I think, you know, another one of the things for me, because I'm a blogger and I'm producing so much content, is when I go to an event, I usually, you know, end up with a lot of questions at those, you know, after hours at dinner or in the hallway in between conferences or whatever. So I have a lot of interesting conversations and questions that I actually repurpose those into content.
Sure.
So the last time I went to one of Ed Dale's events, he was in Orlando, Florida, here in the States. And I just had an hour or so flight because I drove down to Atlanta, flew to Orlando. And I happened I just happened to be seated beside a non-internet marketer, you know, a normal end user. It's funny how we see other people, right?
I always wonder who those people are. What do they look like, by the way?
Interesting. It's really interesting. I had this really great conversation with him for half of the flight at least, you know. I was really engaged. And they look at us as geeks. We look at them as end users. So anyway, the minute I landed, I wrote a blog post, and it was called Meet Passenger Steve. His name was Steve. And so I noticed that he had, you know, he had a smartphone, and I just asked him a couple of questions. I'm like, so what's your favorite search engine, you know, and, you know, yada, yada, and just got some really good feedback and actually blogged the entire conversation. And then he came back in because he'd asked me for my blog address on the plane. He came back in and commented on it, and he, you know, one of the comments he made was, you know, I'm flipping through my ski magazine all the time, and I always see these ads like join our affiliate program and earn 50%. He's like, what is an affiliate program? Yeah. You know, so to see it from the other side of the spectrum and stuff, even just not even at the events, but the whole travel experience, I usually come up with so much content to share. across the web. So if you're a content creator, traveling, especially to industry events, is just phenomenal.
Yeah, no, absolutely, that would be true. Yeah, and speaking of traveling, I guess we better actually get back to work so that we can, let's see, use your presentation. Well, yeah, I really have to have a presentation. You just have to be prepared for extemporaneous questions, right?
Yeah, apparently Darren's going to lead, and Ed Dale said just show up and look decent. So I'm good to go. I don't have to actually prepare slides or anything like that. So, but yeah, I think Ed and Darren are going to lead that particular panel, and I'm looking forward to it. I'm real excited to be involved with that because I think it'll be an incredible conversation.
Well, yeah, and I mean it's a leading edge, very to me at least unknown. But I, like I said, I don't get out much. But it sounds to me like it's right there at the cusp. So it should be really, really good to see what to come up with.
Yeah, so we should get back to work, or we'll never get out of here. You fly out tomorrow. I do, too. I think I have to leave here in about 24 hours. So I'll see you on Friday, if not Thursday evening, in Melbourne.
Friday morning or Thursday evening, something like that. So
yeah.
It's been a gas talking to you, as always, and it'll be even more fun seeing you in person.
Yep, I'll see you there. Look forward to it.
Okay. Thanks, Lynn. Take care.
Right.
Bye.
Bye, Leslie.